Hello, and welcome to the NPRD podcast with nurse practitioner and registered dietitian Robin Kiewit. Eating disorders, body image, medicine, they are all interconnected. But with so many programs, techniques, and advice to choose from, it's easy to be overwhelmed. Robin, with more than 25 years of experience as a nurse practitioner and registered dietitian, offers help and hope for everyone. Families, children, and adults. Along with veteran talk show host and good friend, Jordan Rich, Robin invites you to learn much more right here on the NPRD podcast.
Welcome to the NPRD podcast. We are very fortunate today with our guest. I will start with a word from our sponsor. This podcast is sponsored by Galen Hope, a mental health and eating disorder treatment center. For more information, call 561-556-8208 or visit galenhope.com, www.galenhope.com. So we are lucky today to have one of the founders of Galen Hope on. She's been a guest before, Amy Boyer. She's a psychologist and a co-founder of Galen Hope. Thank you for being on again today.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah. So when we originally spoke, you had, this was over a year ago or about a year ago.
Right.
You had explained, you know, why Galen Hope came to be and how Galen Hope came to be. There were lack of treatment centers for what Galen Hope really strives for in your area of the country, which is South Florida, correct?
Yes, although so many of our clients come from all over the place, not just South Florida. So a lot's happened at Galen Hope since we last spoke to you. So yeah, but we get
two locations now.
We have a second location in Delray Beach. And growing. We have housing for clients who are coming from out of town. So that makes it possible for people from everywhere to come to Galen Hope.
Where are the furthest reach? I know we don't want to breach confidentiality, but sort of globally, where are you seeing some of your...
We are getting clients from Latin America. So we've gotten them from a number of Latin American countries, and we get people from really all over, mostly the East Coast, but all up and down the East Coast a lot.
We wanted to talk today about getting better versus getting well.
And one of my favorite things to talk about.
Yeah. And I think, you know, for the folks who listened to the first time you were on the podcast, we talked a lot about what we can speak to and how we can work with humans instead of looking at folks as treatment resistant, because we don't want to say that. We want to look at ways to stay in community and stay attuned. And that's a lot of what I feel like Galen Hope really embodies. So I'd just love to hear from you, Amy, on what your sort of differences are. Like, how would you describe getting better versus getting well?
Right. Well, not that both aren't goals, but getting better to me has a lot to do with remission of symptoms and stabilization of your symptoms, whereas getting well is the person building phase. I really became interested in this differentiation when I was in private practice, because I saw so many people who were sent to higher levels of care. And I got referrals from treatment centers all over the country when I was in private practice. And one of the things that really struck me was that while this person is better, certainly, than the condition they were in when they left to go to treatment, they weren't well, that they weren't able to really function yet. They hadn't really integrated that experience yet outside of the treatment center, able to make sense of it and able to apply those skills on a regular basis in order to be able to manage their lives independently. They were very, very overwhelmed. When they left that treatment center, again, they may be more stable, they may have more insight. So it doesn't mean that they didn't do good work there, but there's a big leap between stabilizing and looking good in a treatment center and really taking those steps towards living an independent, meaningful life on your own. That bridge between taking the knowledge and the skills that you developed in treatment and applying them to the real world, which is a big focus on what we do at Galen Hope, is really an area of interest to me. I think there's a lot of rich work to be done there, and in many ways, it can be more difficult than those initial weeks and months of stabilization.
You're absolutely right. And that's why there's so much synergy. Obviously, you and Wendy started Galen Hope, but even thinking about the in-home model of care that Within Health has, right? So these are ways of caring for human beings that we just haven't, I think, done enough of.
A lot of factors, right? I think that when someone's in, if they're in a higher level of care, they have a lot of support and containment. It's a little bit of a bubble, and people can begin to really feel safe. And I think that feeling of safety in a treatment program is so important for people to feel like they can open up and do the work and talk about things that maybe they've been avoiding, things that are very painful to look at and talk about. So I do think it's important, that bubble. I think that's a necessary part of the process. But at a certain point, people need to leave. Sometimes they have to leave because insurance says you're done, whether or not you're done or not. And there needs to be a transition process back into living in the world, reconnecting with your family, your support network, job, school, whatever it is that you're involved with, depending on what phase of life you're in. And that transition back into your life is so much more challenging than I think many people in our profession are willing to acknowledge.
I think it's the toughest thing. And I say that from the experience of a clinician to also really watching a family member just crumble and the advocacy that went on to help that person. And then because I think the clinicians just didn't see it. But Galen Hope, I just wanted for our listeners to hear this too. It's a treatment center that treats primary eating disorders and mental health disorders.
Correct.
So I wonder if
Either
you.
or and both.
And it's more of this community model. And last time you were on, you talked about this really full comprehensive assessment using the assertive community treatment model.
Model,
You are
right.
adapting from that.
Right. So assertive community treatment is a community psychology model where people who at one time perhaps might have lived in institutions are able to be managed in the community. And so there's teams of people who maybe go to their homes and allow them to live in a less restrictive environment. And what they found is that many people do much better when they have access to their support network, where they can work and live more meaningful, connected lives. That even though they may spend their life with the burden of a high level of symptoms psychiatrically, that with the right support system, with regular visits to their home and with case management, that many of these individuals can do as well or better. And they're living with more dignity and autonomy than they would be if they were living inside of some kind of long-term care facility or psychiatric facility. And so we've borrowed some concepts from that. So Galen Hope actually is a unique model in the sense that we are not a residential. We offer a 12-hour a day PHP, 7 days a week. Clients can live with us. Sometimes that's more convenient or more clinically appropriate for them, or they can live on their own. And so it does allow people to live in a less restrictive environment. And that presents certain challenges. You know, if you're going home at night and you don't have that support, it means you have to employ those skills, those coping skills, while you're still getting a lot of support from us. And for families that have either young adults or teenagers with us, them living with their family members while they're doing the more intensive work, the family's kind of along for the ride, and they are seeing their loved one at night every night. So it does allow for greater involvement of the family and for them to really be more a part of the process rather than their loved one being in a residential and there's a separation. Sometimes that separation is necessary. It's not a criticism, but there are a lot of families that can manage it and for whom it may be more appropriate, especially when we're talking about kids and adolescents, that there's a lot of arguments for why they should be able to stay with their families. And for a lot of families, that's more comfortable. And again, that they're having to change along with their loved one. So they aren't waiting 2, 3 months for their loved one to come home to begin to unfold what took place while that person was in treatment.
I think that's the biggest key point. It's a way too with a younger person to see, and even with an older adult, that family is there, like that family healing. The family's doing the work too.
Right. And that's a big part of helping people get well, is the family does need to change along with them. Sometimes it's really a matter of families just getting a better understanding, more education around what this individual really is struggling with, what their diagnosis is, what things make it better or worse. Sometimes there's some real issues that do need to be addressed within the family. And again, that isn't anyone's fault. Sometimes things happen to families. And everybody's affected by it. And maybe one person develops a mental illness that requires treatment. And it's telling us something about the way that person experienced that event. Or that since everyone was affected by whatever this event was, maybe they weren't as attuned to what was going on with this one person in the family. And they missed it. And so the therapy, the family therapy, is an opportunity to have a corrective experience around that and learn more about what this individual needs. And also to maybe correct some narratives that developed around that time. So I think a lot of times families feel like they're being blamed because maybe they engaged in some behaviors that enabled or supported certain aspects of this person's struggles. But oftentimes, when you really get to know the family and you kind of hear the story of how these problems developed for this individual, you can understand how they developed this pattern of responding. And in order to kind of clear the path for this individual to really, again, not just get better, but get well, we need to draw attention to the dynamics happening around this individual. And I always say to families, that's the good news, that all we're doing is asking you to change some behaviors. We're ch asking you to be more aware of your responses, maybe in certain situations that are actually creating a barrier or an obstacle to your loved one really taking those steps into becoming well. And that's a real shift in thinking for many people. If this individual has really been struggling psychologically for a long time, if they're very prone to anxiety, or maybe they've had some suicidal thoughts or suicidal behaviors, again, it makes sense. The family is scared. Anytime this person demonstrates distress or they have symptoms, the family gets scared that it's going to get to that worst case scenario where this person might threaten suicide. And so everyone kind of gets held hostage by this individual's symptoms. And so it makes sense that they're jumping in and trying to help that person self-soothe, or they're doing things for them so that their level of distress doesn't become unmanageable. So it makes sense that these patterns develop.
I always say to families and parents, we're always doing our very best in every moment, and no one sends us home with a guidebook. Like, nobody, necessarily tells us how to do it. We're doing our best. And to your point, like, sometimes it's just, how can we help in that moment? Maybe it isn't the best way, but that's why we have teams and treatment centers where we can learn different ways. So we're just going to take a moment to hear from our sponsor. Galen Hope provides individualized, flexible, and evidence-based eating disorder and mental health treatment. Founded and led by renowned psychiatrist Dr. Wendy Oliver Pyatt and clinical psychologist Dr. Amy Boyers, the program treats adolescents and adults at their locations in Coral Gables and Delray Beach, Florida. Galen Hope's approach is grounded in high-frequency individual therapy, sophisticated psychiatry, extensive family support, and community integration. The program affirms and accommodates all genders, body shapes and sizes, and neurotypes, as well as being able to provide many of their services for individuals and families in Spanish.
Find out more at galenhope.com.
So welcome back. Let's talk about getting better versus getting well and the loved one's expectations of this particular client. I think this is a big piece.
Right. In my opinion, being well means that other people can have expectations of you. When somebody is suffering, when somebody is, quote, sick, whether that's with a physical illness or a mental illness, when somebody has really been struggling and they really have not been functioning for a while, oftentimes the people who love and care about them kind of rush in and offer a lot of support and help. And that, for anybody, whether you're sick or not, if somebody offers you help and does something for you, that feels good. That's nice to have somebody take care of something for you that might be something, small, but it's still something that gets checked off your list. Or it could be something that's actually stressful or difficult for you. And other people are going to be stepping in saying, let me handle that for you. Let me help you with that. Or don't bother him or her with that. She can't handle that right now. And so they begin to get treated as if they are very fragile and not capable. And that might be true for a period of time. And that might be reasonable for a period of time. But what happens is some dynamics, some patterns develop around this person who's been really struggling. And the more help that's offered, the more fears that that individual has about assuming responsibility for themselves once the symptoms start to abate and they are more capable of handling stress and taking on more responsibility for themselves. And when somebody's really burdened by a lot of psychological symptoms, it's very hard for them to see how their illness is impacting other people. A lot of times as parents or family members, we don't want to burden that person with that because we see how hard every day is for them. But we're having our own experience of that individual's illness as well. And that is real also. And it does cause us to experiences changes in our everyday lives as well. And so there does come a time where the support network should be able to acknowledge your illness has also impacted me. It has caused me pain as well. And that I do think that that's an important part of that person getting better. I think it often can be a motivator for them to not fall back into certain old patterns of behavior when, if they can make space for the fact that this has been hard for my parents, this has been hard for my spouse. And I'm aware of that. I'm sensitive to that. And so, I think there's a time and a place to have that conversation. And as somebody gets stronger, more stable in their recovery, as their thinking becomes more clear, as they understand what they need to do to manage their recovery and manage their triggers, that the people in their life who've maybe really been offering a huge amount of support, that they can begin to treat them like they treat other people, that they can have expectations of them, that they can expect them to show up when they say they're going to show up, that they can expect them to manage their bills, to make their own doctor appointments, to fill their own prescriptions, to finish something that they start. And so that's a development over time. And I think that can be a pattern that can be very hard. Often what I see is in parents to break, that they are still offering more support than the person needs. And if we do that, it really is encouraging them to go back into a role of being sick and dependent. And so we need to be very careful about that. We want to offer support. We know that as somebody is transitioning out of treatment, and again, even if that is someone who's only doing outpatient treatment, as somebody is really working very hard on themselves and working through some very difficult, painful issues, we want to be sensitive to that. But there is change happening.
Yeah.
And the change shouldn't just be in that individual. The whole family has to change to support that person.
It reminds me of a philosophy called Circle of Security Parenting, where the pillars are bigger, stronger, wiser, kinder. And I often, you know, say this in conversations with patients and then to myself with my kids. Like if there's a situation that comes up that's challenging, how can I be bigger, stronger, wiser, kinder? How can I be in this situation for my child or encourage this in a family situation where those pieces are being emulated? If in fact you are in this place where this client or patient is well, they've moved through better, if it's fair to say that you kind of segue through better to get to well.
You know? I would agree with that. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So. Right. First you get better, but better, like I always say, better isn't necessarily better, right? That you're not all better, right? That being well is more about being functional. It means that you can handle things on your own. And that doesn't mean that you don't need to see a therapist or a dietitian. It doesn't mean that you don't need people to consult with. It's just that you can handle that on your own. You know what to bring to your team. You know if a symptom is concerning and that you need to jump on that, that you don't need the people around you scurrying around you, reminding you or telling you that you don't have to do something because you're having a bad day. Being well isn't the same as feeling happy all the time. Being well doesn't mean you're never going to have a bad day or that you aren't going to have episodes where your symptoms creep back into your life. It means you know what to do about that. You have a system in place for yourself to manage that.
And your support system knows how to do it differently.
And that the support system trusts that you will be able to manage it. Mm-hmm. Your support system might give you some feedback. They might say, listen, you seem more irritable, or you haven't been returning my phone calls lately. That being well means that you can accept that feedback without pushing back, without being defensive, that there is an expectation that your family is entitled to be worried about you. They've been through a lot as well. And that there can be a conversation. They may not be right, but that you can hear it. And you can accept that feedback and question it. Wow, am I missing something? Or wow, I really didn't want to acknowledge that to myself that's been happening. But now that mom or dad has brought it up, I guess it does confirm that maybe I'm slipping a little bit. Maybe I need to see my psychiatrist. Maybe I've been through a stressful experience and I didn't want to think that it got the better of me, but it did.
This is where I like to ask the guests where they see the field going versus where it's going. And I think you and Wendy have really embodied where we want to see the field going. Treatment in homes, 12-hour PHP, you know, really including this model of making sure that an individual can live in the community again and not just be better, but be well,
Right.
acknowledging that this means family and loved one shifts, and also that they embody their, when things don't go well, and they understand they may not be happy every single day, every single moment. So,
Right.
just curious, because you've been in the field over 20 years, you're so experienced. Where do you see the field going? Where is it going? And is there a difference? Sometimes there isn't.
You know, it's hard to say. I think it depends on, I think your vantage point from outpatient could be very different than your vantage point coming from the treatment center world.
That's
And
fair. Yeah.
I think that unfortunately, insurance companies have a huge influence over the delivery of care. They look for certain markers, really, of, I think, stabilization. But I think anybody who works in the mental health field knows that that's really just the beginning, and they don't give people the time they need to integrate all those changes and to really do the deeper work to figure out how did I land here? What do all these symptoms and behaviors mean? And how do I march forward in a different way? There is that, that is that work is not acknowledged the majority of the time by insurance payers. It's and I think that people would probably go to far fewer treatment centers if they were given a little more time to do the work. When you're looking at somebody who has something like an eating disorder or an addiction or a very serious mood disorder, or all of the above, I mean, I think that so many of the clients that we see, they have multiple diagnoses and there's many layers to their story that all have to be woven together to help this person make sense of their experience. And that doesn't happen quickly. And I don't think that there's one modality of treatment that has all the answers. I think that every orientation to treatment brings something valuable. And I think it takes a long time as a clinician to develop those skills as well. And so you can't just practice one form of treatment. You really do need to have a variety of tools in your toolkit in order to help people because every individual is unique and they may not, even though you might think DBT would be great for this person, that may not work for them, or it might not work for them now. And then what? So I think that I think what we're doing at Galen Hope is so unique and why it's working is because we slow it down. We give people the time to understand their own story, to put one foot in front of the other, and make sure that they have a viable plan in place that they can act on before they leave. That they are not considering, oh, okay, you're discharging IOP in a couple of weeks. I guess you should, send some resumes out now, or maybe you should go and look for an apartment now. That is all being done well in advance of the discharge. And I think that that is a really different approach.
It's more of that attunement, I think, to that individual that we were talking about.
Right.
That we talked about last time too. And the other thing you had said when you were on before, and I think is a very big piece that I really admire and respect about you, is when we see a treatment modality not working, and then we need to take a good hard look at ourselves, right, as clinicians. And you
Right.
spoke to that just so beautifully last time. And that's where I also, I think, see the field going in more of that direction. I hope. because we're humans too. So
Right.
we often need to think of things in a different way.
One thing that I have been pleased to see is that with many of these more sort of manualized treatments, what I'm seeing in the literature is much more examination of the efficacy of these types of treatments and also ways that they can be adapted in order to make them more individualized. So I feel like I'm seeing more research that reflects the real world of how treatment is delivered in the clinician's office, which I think is really nice.
Amy, thank you so much for being on today. And
Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad to have you on again. We said we'd do it and we did it. And so that's
Yes.
wonderful. And so I know are you speaking at a conference coming up or you're attending a conference?
I'm speaking at a NATSAP conference, actually with Wendy Oliver Pyatt. We're speaking on the intersection of neurodivergence and eating disorders.
Well, I would love to hear more about that. And again, thank you. Thank you for being on. Take care.
Thank you for joining us for the NPRD podcast with Robin Kivett. We invite you to subscribe, download, rate and review us, and share this valuable podcast with friends and family. Help and hope is found here. For more, just go to robinkivett.com. That's robinkievit.com. Or check out thenprd.com.